I think it's time for us to begin. It's 7. And we're going to get started tonight. I'm glad to see you tonight. I see some faces that I'm not familiar with. I'm glad you're here visiting with us. And I hope you can come back. And especially that you'll be encouraged tonight by the Word of God. We're going to spend some time tonight talking about child discipline. Okay, we're going to look at the perspective of the responsibilities of parents to discipline their children. Okay, you may already have children that have grown up, but we're still parents, and we still have grandchildren. We still have people we can teach, young women, young parents, and so on. This is a principle, Bible teaching we need to keep for all of us. So this is very important. And we're going to be hitting the halfway point next Wednesday on this winter quarter. It's moving along really fast. So I'm trying to make it balanced so that we can address different topics. So we'll see. We're going to spend at least 2 more class sessions talking about parenting. At least 2 more, if not 4 more, depending on the time. But there's some other topics we're going to see also. But yeah, let's talk about child discipline tonight. That's the topic for tonight. Okay, I don't know if you thought about it, but on the Great Commission, when we have the Great Commission rather in Matthew 28, and I'm going to read it for you, and then we're gonna go in a word of prayer. But notice this, Matthew 28, verse 18, and Jesus came and spoke to them, saying, "All authority has been given me to me in heaven and on earth." And then notice, "Go therefore and make" what? "Disciples," okay? "Make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of our Father and of the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit." And then notice verse 20, "teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." Amen. Okay, so we have that word disciple. Very interesting, okay, that word disciple related to the word discipline. In fact, they both come from the Latin. Okay, one of them, the word disciplina, which means teaching, okay, from the Latin, and discipulus, which means a pupil or a student. Okay, so they're related. Okay, they're together. So a disciple must have discipline. Okay, and we see right off the bat here the type of discipline they must have. It says, verse 20, "teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you." So that fits really well in what we know to be preventive discipline and corrective discipline. So teaching falls in the realm of preventive discipline. And then we have maybe the word punishment, "my son, too hard, too strong." But there's chastisement mentioned, rebuke, and so on. Corrective discipline, okay? Okay, so discipline. So I already made the point, discipline is corrective and preventive, okay? 2 types of discipline. Usually when we talk about discipline, what's the first thing that comes to mind? What type of discipline? Preventive or corrective? Of course, corrective. Yeah, we think about discipline, we think about time out to our children or spanking or whatever. Something negative, okay? But yeah, that's part of discipline. But that's not all discipline, okay? On the last class we had, we talked about 4 examples where parents were to teach their children. Okay, we look at 4 examples in the Old Testament. And that's most of the discipline, teaching, instructive discipline. Okay, we're disciplining as we teach. So if we fulfill our role of teachers in the home, we have maybe 50%, if not more, maybe 70% of the discipline side. The other 30%, whatever's left over, is corrective discipline. But the most important part of discipline, the biggest part of discipline is instructive discipline. Okay? And we get that here in the Great Commission is an example. How do you make disciples? By teaching them. Correct? You make disciples, and a disciple is supposed to learn and supposed to be a disciple, a learner of the teachings of the master. Okay, now later down the road, when the disciples become Christian, when the first disciples, Now we see some cases of corrective discipline. Like when we get in 1 Corinthians 5, we have there a brother which has been acting, he's in sin, and he's, the Apostle Paul commands that he should be put in discipline, corrective discipline in this time. Okay, and then we see the fruit of the discipline. That's a really nice example of this corrective discipline, because the purpose of corrective discipline is not to shame the person who's being disciplined, is not to embarrass him or her, or to make sure everyone knows how wrong she was or how wrong he is. The only purpose of preventive and corrective discipline is so the person will be right with God. That's the purpose. To restore such a person in the spirit of meekness. Okay? Like we read in Ephesians 6, 1, 2, and 3. Okay? So that's important for us to consider. And we can apply this to parenting as well. And of course, the Bible speaks about parenting. And we're going to get to Ephesians 6, and then we're going to look at some Proverbs. But before we move on, let me give you four styles of discipline that are practiced in our society. Okay, these are styles of discipline that have been researched, that have been families have been asked about, and styles of discipline or parenting also have been researched. And there's different types of varieties of this discipline, but let me give you four of the most important. First one of them is authoritarian, okay, style of discipline. Okay, I'm going to try to give you a Bible example of this type of discipline. But this type of discipline, authoritarian, is when parents are controlling. Okay, they're controlling. They're rigid, okay, and they're cold, okay. We can summarize it, my way or the highway, okay. This is a type of discipline, okay. The word of these parents, it's the law, okay. No questions asked, no one argues, no one asks why. This is the law and you do it, okay. They value being strict, okay. And then they don't like to be questioned. Okay, they value unquestioned discipline. Go sit down, and you go sit down. See what I'm saying? No talking to the children. Okay, and then of course they don't tolerate any expression of disagreement. It's not tolerated. This is the authoritarian style of parenting or of discipline. And I'm sure you might be familiar with someone, or you know someone that was this type of parent. Okay, maybe it was your dad, your mom, maybe it was your grandfather, or I don't know. Okay, it gives me the picture of a man, usually, when I think of this type of discipline. Like a man, really strong father, sometimes grandfather. Okay, and I do remember having someone like that on my family. Okay, I think one of my grandparents, he was like that. And he was strict, and didn't want to hear from you, just wanted... You need to do what he wants to tell you, and that's it. Okay? And you better do it, because you get in trouble if you don't do it. Okay? All right? Let me give you an example of this, what I think is a good example from the Bible. Okay? If you have your Bible, you want to go with me to 1 Samuel. In 1 Samuel chapter 20, and at least we're not told much about the background or the history of King Saul, but we have a snapshot of himself dealing with his son, Jonathan, okay, when he was king already. We also need to take into account that by this time, he was being bothered by a spirit, or what some believe, he was maybe depressed in a way. So he was already changed, he was different. Okay, but I want to notice the way he treats his son Jonathan. Okay, I want to point out, because he does it in this authoritarian way. Okay, dealing with son Jonathan. So in 1 Samuel chapter 20, let me go back to verse 28. Notice we have here an interchange, a discussion between Jonathan and Saul, father and son. Notice, so Jonathan answers Saul, David earnestly asked permission of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, please let me go, For our family has a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to be there. And now, if I have found favor in your eyes, please let me get away and see my brothers. Therefore, he has not come to the king's table. So in the context, there's a supper going on. It's a feast. And David was expected to show up. He was invited to the feast. He should be in his feast. And there was a seat separated for David, but he didn't show up because he was trying to hide from Saul, who wanted to kill him. So here's Jonathan interceding for David, his friend. Then notice verse 30. So we see here Jonathan trying to excuse David, trying to justify David, but Saul is not willing to hear it. Notice verse 30. Then Saul's anger was aroused against Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, you shall not be established, nor your kingdom. Now therefore, send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die." He was not willing to hear any excuses. He was not trying to make a dialogue with Jonathan. He was telling him what to do in this my way of the highway. Okay? Now notice this, verse 32. Jonathan tries to talk to him. Verse 32, and Jonathan answered Saul his father and said to him, "Why should he be killed? What has he done?" Okay? He's saying, "Why are you doing this? Why do you want to kill him? Would you just please explain to me what has he done that has upset you so much? Just let me know." Is that a fair question or not? From a son to his father, I would say it's a fair question. Yeah, in the New Testament, we see Jesus saying, "Which father, if your son asks you for bread, you're going to give him a serpent?" Fathers are good, should be good. But we see this father, he doesn't want to dialogue with his son. He has this authoritarian way of dealing with his son. Then notice verse 33. Then Saul, instead of answering the question, say, "Okay, yeah, listen, sit down, let me explain to you my rationale, why am I doing what I'm doing." No, he said, verse 33, then Saul cast a spear at him to kill him. "You do it or you die." He tried to kill him, by which Jonathan knew that it was determined by his father to kill David. He said, "Well, my father doesn't want to talk to me." Okay? So this is an example of this type of parenting or this type of discipline. Okay? In Saul's mind, he might have justified that Jonathan was betraying him for David. Okay? That might have been on his mind. Okay? But he didn't have the right to act this way, but to dialogue with his son instead of acting in this way, very strict, demanding unquestioning obedience from his son, and not tolerating any expression of disagreement. Okay? Some parents are like this. Okay? And I'm going to give you some of the consequences of this style of parenting in a moment. I want to present to you all four that I have here, and then I'll give you some of the consequences, because all of them have consequences. Okay? All of these parenting styles have consequences on the children. Okay? So the second one is called permissive parenting style. It's a permissive style. Okay? What do I mean by this? Okay? There is inconsistent feedback. Okay? What else do these permissive parents do? They usually require little, very, very little of their children. Okay? And they don't see themselves as holding too much responsibility as parents. Okay? Or any responsibility how their children turn out to be. Okay, permissive type of parenting. Okay, they place little or no limits or control on their children's behavior. Okay, you getting the picture? They place no limits or control on the children's behavior. They're permissive. Okay, they let them do. They let them do whatever they want to do. But maybe they try to be cool. They try to become friends. And let's say if I discipline him, I'm going to look uncool, and he's not going to like me, she's not going to like me, so I'm just going to let them be, figure it out for themselves, and then do whatever they want to do. I'm going to be permissive, just let it happen. Doesn't matter, they're rude, if they fight, I'm just going to let them do it, okay? I'm not going to put any restrictions on them. That's the permissive type of parenting. Do you remember any parent in the Bible that was permissive towards his children? Oh, was that? Okay, exactly. Yes, let's go to 1 Samuel. And now that we're there in Samuel, just go back a few chapters. And we have a parent in the Bible who took this approach to discipline. He was a permissive parent. Okay, notice 1 Samuel 2:12. Okay, we see there, now the sons of Eli were corrupt. They did not know the Lord. Okay, you know, Eli was a priest. In case you didn't know, you just have to turn to 1 Samuel 1. And in the first verses, you see that Eli was a priest. In verse 9, chapter 1, verse 9. Okay, and his sons were evil, were corrupt. Which tells us, not because the man is a preacher or an evangelist or whatever, a teacher, doesn't mean by default his children are going to be God-fearing children. Okay, this means that children need to be worked on, need to be taught, need to be disciplined, preventive discipline, corrective discipline. There's work that needs to happen for the children of a priest to be godly men. If you become a permissive father, you let it happen, this is what's going to happen in some cases, okay? Now, the sons of Eli were corrupt, they did not know the Lord, okay? When they're supposed to be the ones interceding between the people and God, the ones in the middle, they did not know the one from whom they were interceding. That's just incredible, okay? But that's not surprising, because it happens. Happens even today, all right? So each of us needs to be careful, because this happens even today. Now, notice right there in verse 3, chapter 3, excuse me. Chapter 3 and verse 13. Let's read from verse 11. Chapter 3 and verse 11. Notice, then the Lord said to Samuel, behold, I will do something in Israel at which both ears of everyone who hears it will tingle. In that day I will perform against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end. You remember Samuel, little Samuel, heard the voice of the Lord calling him, Samuel, for three times, and then finally he said, here I am, Lord, and then the Lord talked to Samuel. One of the things he told Samuel was that he was going to punish Eli's sons, and Eli, of course, for what they have been doing. It was revealed to Samuel. Now, here's the Lord speaking again, okay? And then verse 1 Samuel 3:13. For I have told him that I would judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows, because his sons made themselves vile, and he did not restrain them. Okay, that word restrained. In other words, to rebuke. He did not practice any corrective discipline when he saw and knew that his children were acting against the word of God. He just let it go. He was a permissive father, okay? And this type of parenting still happens today. Parents are permissive. And I would say this is popular too, because some parents, they say, I don't want to deal with my children. I want you to let them do whatever they want to do. Because it takes work to be a father. No one is going to do it for us, okay? It takes work to be a father. So a lot of parents say, well, I just don't want to deal with it. I just want to be cool. Be a friend of them, and just let them do whatever they want to do, and we'll be buddies when we grow up, okay? We're going to be friends, yes.
Romeo, just an addition to that.
Yes.
In his conversation with his children, he offered reason as to why they should not do what they do. He spoke to his children about this, but he did not do anything. It's like the parent in Walmart that we've all been behind, whose child just can, they say, Johnny, if you do that one more time, Johnny, if you do that one more time.
Mm-hmm.
And after the 15th or 100th time, you're ready to take Johnny out.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ideal here is that he spoke to them, he reproved them, but he did not correct them by taking them out of the priesthood.
Correct. Thank you. Thank you for that comment. Yes. Okay, so that's an excellent point here on this example of Eli. Okay, very good. Let's look at the next one. The next one is, I mentioned authoritarian, okay, but this one is authoritative, okay? It's not an authoritarian, but it's authoritative, okay? I hope I'm making that, make that distinction clear. And this type of parents, okay, if the child does something, let's say the child, you go to the room of the oldest boy, and then the younger daughter has eaten all the older brother's candy. And then mom arrives. What is she going to do? Okay, if it's an authoritarian mother or father, she's going to tell her, go to your room, you're going to be grounded for 3 days, and I'm going to take away your blanket that you so much like every night, and you're going to be in your room without your blanket. Go. That's an authoritarian type of father, okay, or mother. Now, if he was a permissive, she's going to walk in the room, see the little girl eating all the candy of her older brother, and she's going to say, okay, just go out, don't do it again, okay, go. Okay? You see the difference? There's a difference. Okay, the child grows confused, say, okay, was he wrong? Was he right? She didn't say anything, so it doesn't matter, I guess. I can do it anytime I want. Okay, but now, if you come to an authoritative father or mother, and he sees that girl eating the candy that she should not be eating, because it doesn't belong to her, she's going to say, okay, let's sit down here for a second. Let me tell you something. You know this candy? It doesn't belong to you. It belongs to your older brother. What would you think your older brother would do when he comes back and finds you? Finds you eating his candy, or comes back later, finds that his candy is all gone. How do you think he's going to feel? Well, I think he's going to be sad. How would you feel if he would have done something to you like that? Oh, yes, Mom, I get it. Okay. But now, because you've done that, I'm going to send you to your room for a couple of hours for you to reflect on what you did. I'm going to give you a time out, and then you can come out. That's not right for you to do that. You see, that's the authoritative type of mother and father. They're in control, but they're reasonable, okay? They don't make their children feel shame or feel really bad, nor do they ignore what they did. Yes, please.
Can you spell that?
Okay, authoritative. I'm going to do my best try, okay? It's authoritative. Authoritative.
Authoritative.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yes. I knew something was wrong. There is authoritative. Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. Then the authoritarian. Am I saying that one correct?
Yes.
All right.
Go to your room.
I'm going to just say that. I'm going to and just keep the pronunciation. Yeah, the go to your room type of parenting. I like that. Okay. But see, they're firm, okay, they're firm, they set clear and consistent limits, okay, they're firm, they show the limits, okay, but they also, although they can be strict in a way, they also are loving. You see the difference? They're loving, they're emotionally supportive, okay, there's love in both, there's support in both, they want the welfare of the child. And they also reason with the children. They reason with them. Okay? They give them explanation why they're doing what they're doing and why they shouldn't behave the way they're behaving. Okay? And then they also explain the reason behind the punishment they're giving them. You see, it's not an arbitrary punishment or just because punishment. They are going to explain why. Of the punishment, okay? This is that type of parenting. Can you think of the Bible, someone who was like that? This type of parent? Yes, definitely. Yeah. If you go to, let's go to Luke. In fact, Luke chapter 2. And we have an example there of Mary and Joseph. Yes, both of them. Mary's the one portrayed there speaking. But remember, Joseph was with her all along. I don't know, it might have to do with the woman being more, they're... Yeah, disciplinary, but I was going to say they do the talking sometimes, okay? They like to do the talking. Nancy and I, we went to do some paperwork back in Monterey on this last week of December. And she poked my rib and said, look at this, Rafa, you see, there were several couples. And they had to come to a counter to talk to someone. And they said, you notice who's doing the talking most of the time? And I said, yeah, I see. It's the women. They're doing the talking. And just the man stands behind. I said, the man is just the one supervising. He's making sure she's saying the right thing. That's why she's doing the talking. But that was something. See, she called my attention to. And I said, yeah, I'm not going to let you do the talking. I'm going to do the talking now when it's our turn. Okay, in Luke 2, 41 through 52, notice this. We have here this example of Joseph and Mary going into Jerusalem for one of the feasts. Okay, the feast of the Passover. Verse 42, and when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem according to the custom of the feast. Okay? You know, they had to go to Jerusalem for three different feasts. Okay? One of them was the feast of the Passover. Okay? And then, verse 43. And when the day finished, when they had finished the days as they returned, the boy Jesus lingered behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother did not know it. But supposing him to have been in the company, they went a day's journey and saw him among their relatives and acquaintances. So when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem seeking him. Now, so it was that after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. Okay? Verse 48. So when they saw him, notice the reaction of Jesus' parents, Joseph and Mary. Okay? So when they saw him, they were amazed. And his mother said to him, Son, why have you done this to us? Look, your father and I have sought you anxiously. You see that authority there of Mary and the way of disciplining. I mean, he was under them, okay, at this point. He was under his parents. And when, excuse me, some of us could have just gone very crazy or raise our voices or push him or whatever, I don't know, be really rough on them for having been away for 3 days, just like that. Now she comes and then she shows this love for him. She says, Son, this is what happened. Why have you done this to us? Okay? Look, your father and I have sought you anxiously. Okay? And then he said to them, why did you seek me? Did you not know that I must be about my father's business? You see, here's the punishment for Jesus. He enjoyed being with those men, asking questions and listening to them. But the punishment was, okay, you're going to come home now. And then verse 50, but they did not understand the statement which he spoke. Notice verse 51, then he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject to them, but his mother kept all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and men. See, beautiful example. Okay? You see, different type of parenting. Okay? Which one are we? Which one are we doing? Okay? Now, let me give you a fourth one. This is also very popular in our day and society. And this is the uninvolved parent. Okay? Uninvolved. Okay? Not being involved. Okay? Parent. And this is, there's so many of them nowadays. Parents who do not care about the life of their children. They're just not involved in their lives. They know they have children, but it's just like if they didn't have them. They're not involved. They don't know their birthdays. They don't know if they have homework. They don't know how they're doing in school. They don't know if they have friends or who they're friends with or anything. They don't know, much less social media. They don't know about their accounts and things like that. They don't keep track of them. They're uninvolved parents. Notice, for instance, I don't have an example, but the Bible speaks about uninvolved parents. Notice in Proverbs 29 and verse 15. Notice Proverbs 29, verse 15. The rod and rebuke give wisdom. Notice the second part of the verse. But the child left to himself brings shame to his mother. You see, there's a child being left to himself. A daughter being left to herself. Why? Because mom and dad are not involved in their lives. And what's going to happen most of the times? They're going to bring shame to the family. Shame to dad, shame to mom, because mom and dad did not want to get involved in their child's life. Okay? So this is another type of parenting. Okay? These parents, they show no interest in their children, and they are sometimes indifferent. Sometimes they reject their children. Okay? Emotionally, they're detached from their children. Okay, they don't share any common emotion. Okay? They see the role, they say, well, I'm feeding him, I'm clothing him, I'm providing shelter, that's all I need to do. Okay? I don't care how he feels, how she feels, what concerns him, concerns her, or what she's struggling with, or what he is struggling with. I'm just providing, that's all. And this is something that is very popular. But let me tell you something. Out of these four parenting styles, which one do you think is the best? I don't think that's hard to point. Okay? The example that Joseph and Mary did, that's the best. Now, which one do you think is the worst? And this is by research, we know for a fact which one is the worst.
The uninvolved.
Of course, yes. It's better to be authoritarian. It's better to be permissive than being uninvolved. And let me tell you why. I met a gentleman earlier today, and he told me a story that broke my heart. I wanted to cry right there in front of him. He just got out of jail. And then as I was talking to him, he said that he went to jail for 16 years. And then I said, okay, now do you have family? And then in the conversation he mentioned, and my son. And I said, so you have a son? And I said, yes. How old was he when you were put in jail? He said, he was one. I said, that's, for me, that's the worst thing that can happen to a dad, for me. I don't know about you, but being away from a child so long, I don't know, probably just rather die. It's pain. All day, every second. And then he told me something that really caught my attention. And I asked him, of course I asked him, did you get to see him when you were in jail? He said, no. My mother will come visit him and she will bring me pictures of him. I'll see him in pictures. But the mother of my son, she wouldn't let him come see me. Okay? What happened? What happened when you got out of jail? I said, well, I went to see him. What he tell you? And he told me, he said that his son told him, Dad, I have missed you so much. Because children need the presence of mom and dad. Even to the point that they can tolerate a very strict father. Authoritarian father, doesn't matter as long as he's present. They want to see him. They want to see her. That's more important than him being away. It's more important. So some parents make mistakes and they have to, there's these issues of child, custody. Okay? And they say, give up. Say, well, now she has the custody. I'm not going to, I don't want to see him anymore, or I don't want to visit him anymore. I don't care. I lost the battle, whatever. Even in those situations, children long for their fathers. They long for them because they're their heroes. And a divorce, they don't understand all that verbiage or whatever you call it about divorce and whatever, or a turn or whatever. They think it's their fault. You know, children are by nature egocentric. They think about themselves. So if dad leaves and never comes back, what is he going to think? I made a mistake. I'm a bad child. I'm a horrible child. That's why my dad doesn't want me. So children prefer an imperfect father more than him being away for so long. Okay? And this example of this gentleman proved it to me, because his child, even though he was, whatever he had done to be deserved to be in jail for that long, his child didn't care. He missed him. And he's always going to miss him, no matter who he is or what type of delinquent he is or whatever. They want dad to be present, mom to be present. And some parents don't understand this, because some parents are egocentric, acting like children. They think only about themselves. I met another lady, and she also got out of jail, and she said, I've been so selfish for so long. I'm ready to look for my four children now. Ready to give away my own selfishness thinking to sacrifice for them. I said, I told her, you're doing the right thing, because they need you. Okay? So, uninvolved parenting is the worst of all, because you damage. You take away something the children so dearly and desperately need. Okay? And I think you know this. I mean, I think we know it. It's common sense. Okay? Children need us. Okay? So, never think you're an imperfect father. Children see you as a hero. And I'm talking to dads. They see you as a hero. That's all you are. A hero. No matter how bad you're at math, or no matter if you cannot change a tire, or like my case, if my wife has to fix the laundry machine, they don't care. I'm still the hero. Okay? I'm still the hero. And that's the way they see parents. They need us present. Okay? But above all, the best way is to be an authoritative parent. Now, let me give you some consequences of this type of... I was going to go over some proverbs, but it looks like we don't have any more time. But I hope I made a good point tonight, okay? But let's do this. I'm trying to see where to go to administer these last few minutes. But children of authoritarian parents, they're going to grow to be withdrawn. They're going to be hard to show relational skills with other children, okay? They're not going to be friendly. And then they're often uneasily around their peers, okay? And then they become dependent on their parents. And then boys become hostile when they grow with authoritarian parents. You know, these parents that don't want a dialogue, that they just punish them and that's it. They have consequences, okay? Now, the permissive parents, it's very interesting. Whether you're authoritarian or permissive, usually the consequences are the same. So children of permissive parents, they're also going to have the same characteristics of these authoritarian children or children of authoritarian parents. Okay? And they also tend to be dependent and moody. Okay? And they're going to lack social skills and self-control. Notice to this. You see adolescents shouting and disrespecting mom, even children, out of self-control. There might be something wrong with the parenting style. Okay? Now, these authoritative, okay? They're the ones who fare best, okay? And they're generally independent. That's what we want them to be, independent. Okay? We want them to be friendly with their peers, and then to cooperate with others. Okay? They also have a strong motivation to achieve. You see the difference? And they're typically successful and they're likable. Okay? Or they fare really good. Okay? And like I mentioned, children of uninvolved parents, they fare worse of all. Okay? This lack of involvement of the parents is going to disrupt their emotional development in a big way. Okay? They're going to feel unloved. They're going to feel emotionally detached, emotionally. And then the development physically and cognitive is going to also suffer. Okay? So we know they suffer the most. Let's look at one proverb before the bell rings. Proverbs 13:24. There is a question as to how to discipline children. Notice Proverbs 13 and verse 24. Notice, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. Okay? Now, there's a question whether how am I going to discipline him? I'm going to use the belt, I'm going to use the shoe, I'm going to spank him in the rear end, or what? Okay? See, the key is here, God is not mistaken in the way he's showing us here how to do it. We just need to be careful not to be angry when we're doing it. Not to do it out of anger. You know, when my children misbehave, they make me angry. But I'm not gonna use the rod, like the proverb says here, in anger. That's putting the focus on me, letting my anger out on the child. I need to revert that and put the focus on the behavior of the child and not use the rod in anger. And the purpose of using the rod, of course, is to do discipline, okay? To save his mind, to save his soul, to save his way of thinking. The purpose of the rod is not to be hitting him every day, hit him every day until he's 18 years old. The purpose of the rod, when we use it, we hope that that's the last time we have to use it. That's the purpose. It shouldn't be a habit of just doing it just because. But we see here, he who spares his rod hates his son. Okay? In other words, he who uses the rod, or he who disciplines his child, is showing love to his child. But he who loves him is going to discipline him promptly. And in fact, I'm using the New King James. The King James uses a more old word. It's the word betimes. He that loved him chasteneth him betimes. And that word, what it means is promptly, or in a timely fashion. That's what it means. Okay, this word betimes. Okay, so any comments so far here on children? See, yes, James.
One thing, just from Rachel and I's marriage, that I thought of constantly is, whatever discipline style you choose, whether it's authoritarian, authoritative, passive, or whatever the one was, or the uninvolved, I think what most people don't think about is that they're teaching their children how to raise their children.
Mm-hmm.
So you're basically, you have the chance to either start a good cycle, or to start a cycle that will just become more chaotic as time goes by.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if people would think more often of, well, how would I want my grandchildren to act? How do I want my grandchildren to be? That would help them choose, well, you know what, I want them to act better than I did as a kid. I want them to act better than my kids did.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that, one thing that I've noticed ever since having kids is just that grandchildren are the gift of not killing your kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. It's
as a grandparent, I can speak to that.
But thank you, James, for that comment. That's true. Definitely what we do is going to be passed on to our children. But I want to thank you tonight for being so patient with me, for bearing with me, and I hope you learned something new tonight. Thank you for your comments and your corrections. I really appreciate it. And we'll see you on Sunday, Lord willing.